So is it okay for Christians to own guns, and should Christians own guns?
Yeah, you're speaking in generalities mm-hmm. there, right? Because I don't want to, if someone said, if I said, yes, it's a sin not to own a gun, and then you come up with some weird scenario where it's not possible for someone to own a gun, am I saying he's sinning? No, right. I'm speaking at a general, as a general rule. As a general rule, it's good for a man to have a job and provide for his family. It's a civic virtue for a man to be hardworking and provide for his family, even though we all know people who participate in that virtue who are maybe jerks or not godly, or you know, but still, it's still a good thing that he has that job. In the same way, I think it's a civic virtue for a populace to be armed. I think it's a civic virtue. So as a general rule, I believe that Christian households should have firearms. I think they should be not scared of them. I think they should have a healthy respect for them, and I think they should know how to use them. So I think that's generally a good thing. And if people are squeamish about it, then as a general exhortation, I would urge them to overcome that. Because if you're squeamish about this, there's a lot more coming down the pike for you to be squeamish about, even more.
So as we see the recent move to restrict guns, we've got gun ban proposals and everything. As a Christian, how do we think about the point at which, how do we think about resistance to government tyranny? What's the point at which you draw a line?
Okay, fortunately, this is not the first time in history that Christians have had to grapple with this. It was a very pressing issue in the time of the Reformation. The Reformers developed what I thought was a very sensible and biblical three-tier philosophy resistance. The first level of resistance was prophetic opposition, preaching, teaching, confronting John the Baptist with Herod, the showdowns, the historic showdowns, was it Ambrose with Theodosius, and you know, where John Knox and Mary, Queen of Scots, where you have a prophetic stand where the church articulates what the Bible teaches and says you may not do this. So the first level of resistance should be with prophetic opposition to non-gospel ways with God's law and God's gospel. So that's the first level of resistance. Mm-hmm. And we haven't, there's some of that in the broad evangelical world, but it's not concerted enough, and it's not coordinated enough, and it's not coming from the churches enough. Mm-hmm. You get more of it from parachurch organizations and particular leaders that God's raised up. And I'm thankful to God mm-hmm. For them. So you have a John Piper on abortion, or Al Mohler doing some things. You know, so there's that level of prophetic resistance.
Right.
And it's not that we are a lobbying group and we would rather you didn't. It's thus says the Lord God, King of hosts, you may not. So that's a prophetic resistance. That's the first level. The second level, the Reformers said, was to flee. So testify, then leave, become a refugee, look for, fall back, look for a place where you can regroup and mm-hmm. and live your life peaceably. You're not, mm-hmm. we're not trying to pick a fight. So you've got tyranny, you oppose it verbally, prophetically, you fall back to any place you can go where you've got breathing room, mm-hmm. so refugees. And then the third level of resistance was armed resistance that was defensive entirely. So that was the basic reformed.
What do you mean by defensive entirely?
They're coming after you and you're defending yourself. You don't have, in the reformed view of civil resistance, you don't have everybody going home and getting their gun and marching on the Capitol.
Right.
So Bastille Day is not a good reformed paradigm. And a model for biblical civil resistance would be the American War for Independence. That was entirely defensive.
Right.
I think there was one raid, John Paul Jones conducted one raid in England and got some, I forget what he did, got some beer or something.
Okay.
It was very minor. All of the fighting was defensive mm-hmm. and was standing up for the rights, but it was armed, right. And but you were defending your territory. You weren't trying to overthrow the established rulers.
How does doctrine of lesser magistrate work into this? And then can you tie that into the recent move on behalf of a number of, well, you have a number of sheriffs throughout the U.S. who are responding to Obama.
Yeah, in book four of Calvin's Institutes, he introduces the doctrine of lesser magistrates, or a doctrine of sort of interposition, where the president declares himself king for life, right? And then Calvin's doctrine of the lesser magistrates would say, the governor would say, no, you're not the king for life. And the governor would tell all the people in the state, that's not constitutional, that's not right. Please feel free to disregard that. And that's actually happening with a number of sheriffs on the gun control legislation that's being proposed. A number of sheriffs are saying they will not enforce these decrees from on high. And in that situation, let's say Dianne Feinstein manages, I don't think it'll get through Congress, but let's say it did get through Congress and the president signed it and 150 different kinds of guns are banned. If I were to have one of those guns, and I'll look in the camera and say, I'm not saying whether I have guns or not. Actually, I do. But if the guns I had were on that list, I would, and the sheriff said, disregard the feds, I would happily and cheerfully disregard the feds on that issue. I would also disregard the feds if the sheriff didn't say that. You know, I don't think they have the right to simply say up is down and down is up, and the right to keep and bear arms means that you don't have the right to keep and bear arms.
Okay, but why, as a Christian, is that lesser magistrate? Why is that important? What does that provide for the Christian?
The Christian view of civil polity is against absolutism. Absolutism in politics is an attempt to be as God, right? So if Pharaoh or Caesar or whoever it is says, I am Lord, and the fundamental Christian confession is Jesus is Lord, then if he's saying, no, you must render to me the things that are God's, Jesus prohibits that. Right. So what people forget is when Jesus said, when it was asked, is it lawful to pay taxes? And he says, give me a quarter. And he says, well, there's a picture of Washington on this, so you can send that to Washington because he's got his picture on it. But the implication is, the statement is, and to God what is God's. Well, how do I tell what is Washington's? That which has Washington's image on it. How do I tell what is God's? That which has God's image on it. Me and my children and my family. All right. I'm not permitted, by the words of the Lord, I'm not permitted to render myself or my people to Caesar. Now, if Caesar says, yeah, yes, you've got to, and intervening governors or magistrates or congressmen say, no, he's not Lord, and they're amening, if the lesser magistrate is amening what Jesus already told me to do, then I will appeal to them. I will submit to them.